Hello, everybody. Welcome to our group coaching call here for May 10th, 2018. Great to be here with you guys. And as we've been doing lately, I'd like to get started on a very positive note and use a chat feature here on the call page. So hopefully you're logged into the call page inside the training portal and just type in your win or wins of the last couple of weeks. So to explain and make sure you understand what a win is, we're not necessarily talking about landing your first client, although that's definitely a great win, but anything positive. You got a positive response for a prospect. You finally feel like you have some good direction on your positioning. You're starting to talk to some people and somebody reacted positively. You feel like you have momentum. Anything along those lines is definitely a win. Anything that gets you a little excited, motivated, helps you get or maintain some momentum. Love to hear about it. We got, Gordy on the call. Mary, welcome, Mary. Gordy. Susan, great to see you here. Andrea, Linda, hey, great to see you. Glad you're here. Just let me know by typing it into the chat box here that we have set up on the call page. We have two areas on the call page. We have the chat area, and then we have the questions area. Just type that into the chat area. Mary says she worked on her Kickstarter list and realized, I know a ton of people. Ah, there you go. You know, isn't that great? It's a great tool because one of the biggest comments I hear from new writers and copywriters, I don't know anybody, or I don't know a lot of people. And I get that. I think part of that is resistance, though, and fear, just because, wait a minute, I never thought that I'd be contacting people I know. I thought we were going to go out there to the marketplace. And yes, you are. However, I've just seen so many successes over the years of people just going out, tapping their network as a first step. As I've mentioned many, many times in the past, this is not just my experience, the experience of many of my coaching clients who've been through this process. You're going to surprise yourself. You never know who can refer you to somebody who sometimes can refer you to somebody else who could end up becoming a client for you or even a referral source, a potential partner, just somebody who is going to be valuable. So never discount your network. Susan says, I got my first client. Yes, that's awesome, Susan. She says, well, a friend asked me to look at her son's website. I had so much fun working on it. And he, my friend's son, was very pleased with what I did and wants me to do some more work for him. That's fantastic. Love it. That is great. Isn't that super, Susan, right? It's your first couple of clients aren't going to look like maybe what you imagine they would look like. They're not necessarily prestigious, marquee clients. But that's not the point. We're trying to take baby steps here, and anything that gets you motivated in the right direction, we're just trying to keep that ball moving down the field, right? And you're definitely doing that. So congrats. That's fantastic. Anybody else? Any more wins you'd like to share? Linda, Andrea, Gordy. And I got a few other folks on the call, but I don't have names. So got a San Rafael, California. Not sure if that's probably Colleen. Oxnard, California. A few others. Okay. So let's get started with questions, feedback. Where can I help you? What do you need right now? What questions do you have? What kind of feedback? Do you have any challenges you need me to help you walk through? I got a couple that were pre-submitted, and I'll start with those while you guys are thinking about it. But again, star 2 on your telephone keypad will raise your hand. Star 2. Or if you're on the call page, I believe there's a raise hand icon there that you can use as well. And I'll unmute you when I see that, and we can have a chat. So let's start with, Mary had submitted one, and Gordy. Mary, I saw you raise your hand. Let me start with Gordy, and then we can also have a chat, Mary. Gordy says, I've decided to focus on the education niche for now. I would like to work in the alternative health niche as well. I don't think that a combination website for those two niches makes sense. Do you agree? And I agree. Yeah, it's too – they're too far removed. I would, you know, if it was healthcare and education, so B2B healthcare and education, that would be a little closer, but alternative health is a little bit too far out there, I think, to make this work. Unless there was a really good reason why you felt it could, and I'm not seeing that here, Gordy. So you said, I thought I could do some spec assignments in alternative health to get started and possibly set up a second website for that niche at a later date. Is that a good plan? Yeah, absolutely. So keep in mind, for that market, your website, if you're looking to get started with some spec assignments, your website is not going to be as important as it will be for the education target market. On that one, you're going to need to have a website that clearly speaks to them, where you can then do that, and then you could go after some spec assignments in alternative health, and you don't have to have a website for that one. So you could do both effectively and set it up. See, here's the thing, guys. It's easier to start with what you know and then get that solid footing in momentum and traction, and then slowly transition to a second area that you'd like to go to than it is to go straight to the second one, skipping step one. So in most cases, that's what makes sense. Now, that's not necessarily the case for everybody, but in most situations, that's what I recommend. And Gordy, for more conversation, I think that's going to be the best move for you. So yeah, good stuff. All right, and Mary, I'll bring you in, and I got your question as well. Let me unmute you. How are you?
I'm good. How about yourself?
Doing well. How are you recovering? How are you feeling?
I'm actually doing really well, but during my physical therapy at the swimming pool, I picked up a nasty virus, and so that set me back about a week. But you know what? It's all good.
Wow. Well, I hate to hear that, but it's sounds like you're healing.
Yeah. In fact, each day I can walk a little bit farther and, making sure to get out there again every day and take care of me first. That's been my biggest problem my whole career is everybody else comes first, never me. So
Yes.
going
Well,
forward, it's going to be me first.
there you go. There you go.
Okay.
So I. You had asked and pre-submitted a question a couple of days ago about LinkedIn and the fact that you have two LinkedIn
Right.
accounts. Do you want to talk about that first?
Yeah, I do because it's been heavy on my mind now for, quite a while. And, for me, it's a good tool. A couple of years ago, I went through a very extensive course for financial advisors on how to use LinkedIn and how to stay within compliance and regulatory compliance and, how not to get sanctioned and fined and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, LinkedIn for financial advisors is kind of blah and boring and it doesn't say a whole lot. There's, not a whole lot of room to be creative. For instance, as an advisor, I'm not allowed to give testimonials. I'm not allowed to endorse anything. I'm not allowed to start my own groups. I can join groups, but I can't have much interaction. So I learned how to use it, to meet people and make connections, and eventually get out there and start, meeting some of the people that I'm connected with. And I've done a lot of business through LinkedIn. But here I am with a whole bunch of connections on LinkedIn, ready to launch a new career, a new business. And, all these years I've had that LinkedIn account, people know me as an advisor. And somebody said to me one day, well, you should probably set up a new account so that people know you as a copywriter and not as an advisor any longer. And I started thinking about that and wondered, gosh, that actually could be true. So I wanted to get some thoughts and ideas on what other people, maybe even what other advisors have done in the past, to get around something like that. Because there's one more piece to this whole thing, and it's that right now I have an approved outside business activity to do travel writing. And And the thing is that each and every quarter, you know, as advisors, you know, our company Googles us. And compliance is out there looking around to see what we do. Plus, my LinkedIn account is monitored. Everything that's there, somebody else is going to read. And so I don't want to put myself in jeopardy with my company right now, you know, because I'm selling my practice. I don't want to put myself in jeopardy there. So my real question is this, or a couple. One, should I set up a new account when I can? And number two, I'm going to have to wait until, you know, I'm ready to flip the switch on my practice and say, okay, I'm done, it's sold, you know, pay me for the practice and be done. So does that kind of make sense on what my dilemma might be?
Yes, it does. And it's a unique dilemma. So follow-up question to that, which is, What target market are you going after as a writer? Are you going after travel?
I would like to get into the travel industry. Okay? I would like to do that. But I also, you know, taking your advice and lots of other people's advice, you know, do what you know. You know, I've been in the construction industry for a long time. You know, I've been an ambassador now for the building industry for, you know, 10 or 15 years now. So I know that group of people. You know, I know construction companies. I know the trades. I know the builders. I know all the things that go into, you know, building, not just residential products, but also commercial. So I know that industry very well. And it, within that industry, is a lot of opportunity for B2B, you know. So that's where I'd like to head first, is this B2B world. And in the construction industry, a couple other things I'm considering is maybe wineries and museums, only because I like them a lot, you know.
Yeah. So how does this construction tie into your financial advisor role? Are they related?
Yes, I've done quite a bit of work for construction companies. You know, I do a lot of work. I handle retirement plans. I handle investments. I handle insurance. I handle, you know, business planning.
Gotcha.
So, you know,
I
know how those companies work.
Okay, that makes sense. I didn't know what the connection was because I know you had a financial advisory, and then I didn't connect the dots with the construction.
Right.
Okay. So what I would say,
I was going to say, you know, in addition, I'm also an accredited pension administrator. So I also handle a lot of retirement plans.
Mm-hmm.
But my goal is not to be in the financial world. That's kind of my goal.
Yeah. So again, it's generally speaking, the rule is, easier to start with what you know and then transition to something else than it is to that something else being a passion, for instance, than to go straight to your passion. Not that you can't do it the other way. It's just going to take more effort. And my concern with the effort piece is that the longer it takes, the more discouraged you can get and the higher the probability that you'll quit. Okay, I see it all the time. I've told you guys that, you know, I was really struggling at the beginning. Well, who do I go after? And one of my first choices was the wine industry because I'm such a wine geek. But that's the thing. It's like, that's a really difficult industry to make a great living as a writer because there's not a lot of writing being produced. Yeah, I mean, are there opportunities? Yeah, but the pockets are relatively small. And that's just kind of be a tough go. The only exception would be if you have an insider view in that market, or you know it really well, and you know where those opportunities are, so you can get a head start. But otherwise, start with what you know and just build something there, and then you can transition. So let's go back to your original question. What do I do? Do I start a new profile? So here's my take. LinkedIn, when you think about it, it's really not about your business persona, meaning like the facade or the storefront, as it is about a person,
mm-hmm.
right? So right. The person doesn't change. You know, I could go from doing what I do today to, let's say, next week I decide to, I don't know, work for a software company. Now,
mm-hmm.
does that mean I should then delete this profile and start a new profile? No, Ed Gandia hasn't changed. He's still the same person. He just changed careers. He went from being self-employed, you know, having a training and coaching business to working for this software company in a completely different role. It doesn't matter. So it's
yeah.
the same thing here. I think you're better off keeping the same profile and just you're making a transition. LinkedIn makes it very, very easy to do that. And
yeah.
people are not going to think, well, wait a minute, is this the Mary I know? Who is this?
For now? Don't remember her doing that.
Yeah, I don't know. Her picture looks the same, but I'm really confused. Mm-hmm. It says now she does this other thing. No, in real life, this happens all the time. So don't let it confuse you. It's just a
okay.
transition. In fact, if anything, it's a great opportunity because then LinkedIn goes ahead and announces it all over, you know, to your whole network, and it's one of the things
oh,
that gets a lot
true.
Of hype. You know, so that's a great yeah. opportunity to start some conversations with people in your network that maybe you
mm-hmm.
wouldn't have started otherwise.
Well, that's true, yeah. yeah. I have a lot of connections, and I would like to just keep this same profile. Now, the fly in the ointment is that as an advisor, that account has to be monitored by a compliance company. Okay, so I'm back to, you know, nobody can give me a testimonial. No one can endorse me. Those have to be taken down right away. You know, I'm not allowed to join groups or start groups. I can join them. I just can't participate. So there's a lot of restriction there. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I can see that going forward at the end of this year when my practice is sold and it transitions to my successor, then yeah, I have freedom there. But for the next 7 months, I'm really restricted on what I can do. So I think my best course of action would be just to start using my LinkedIn account again to start meeting people and just starting conversations personally, rather than, you know, writing something, you know, and start getting those people used to the fact that I am going to make this transition so that they're ready for me when, you know, I can announce that, hey, I'm open for business.
There you go. And at that point, you won't have your hands tied behind your back. So you'll have
right.
a lot more freedom to do some of the other things. But
okay.
I think setting up a different profile now just so that you, for the next 7 months, you can start doing some of those things, I don't think that makes a lot of sense. That's a lot of work.
Okay.
If this
it
whole strategy was the – yeah, if my whole approach depended and hinged on LinkedIn – then
mm-hmm.
we would have to have a different conversation, but it does not. So
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't worry.
Okay. All right. That makes me feel a lot better because I've, you know, been kind of pushed in both directions. Yeah, I keep your same one and other people, you know, no, go ahead and set up something new and do it right away. And I'm like, I just don't think I should.
Yeah.
I think I can make the transition, you know. So, but at the end of the day, you know, I have to kind of ignore LinkedIn for a little while here, you know, only so that it doesn't raise, you know, raise a red flag with compliance. You know, like, what are you doing?
Yes.
You know, I've already had a question a couple times about, you know, gosh, I see some of the people you're connecting with are actually copywriters. You know, how does that tie in? You know, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
kind of thing. So I do have to be very careful with that.
Yeah, yeah, and that's fine.
Which stinks, you know, it stinks, but, well, there you have it.
Well, yeah, good. It's a good problem to have. You're in transition mode, but you're not going to be fully dependent on that. So it's you got 7 months to plan that and how you're going to use it. In the meantime, then start
mm-hmm.
using other channels. Use other channels.
Right, okay. Yep, I think I think that makes me feel a lot better about LinkedIn. And, you know, I can come back to it in a while. And right now I can just start reaching out to some of those connections and just having some conversation. And
there you go.
That'll help push things along. Okay. Alrighty, well, thank you.
You are welcome, Mary. Great question. Good stuff. LinkedIn is just becoming an even more important tool in what we do. I'll be talking more about that. In fact, I'm taking a harder look at it as a prospecting tool, which I've always been a fan of. But you know, I might over the next few months update some of my training, not because what I have for you right now is irrelevant, not at all, but just to give you even more ideas on how you could use LinkedIn. And I wanted to mention, Cook, so Colleen posted her win for the week, says, I got a hit on a warm email. She wants to have a conversation. Awesome. That is great, Colleen. Yeah, it's are you freaking out? It's like, oh my gosh, she wants to have a conversation. What do I do? What do I say? So let me know, and happy to help you with that. And by the way, I got some great stuff on this. Not sure how far along you are in the training, but sessions 6 and 7 are all about that, about how to set up that conversation, how to lead it, what questions to ask, and so forth. So this is very exciting. So glad to hear it. And great job on your website, by the way. Really enjoyed reviewing it yesterday. Which, by the way, a quick reminder for you guys, I am happy to review your website copy. I include one review for everybody here in the program. So whenever you're ready, just go to the website review thread inside the forum, Facebook forum, the Facebook group, and you can post your URL or your Word document there, whatever you have. Excuse me. All I ask is that you read through the instructions first. One of the key requirements is that you've already gone through session 2 in the program and that you have taken that into account before writing your copy. Sometimes in the past I've gotten some websites where people hadn't gone through that yet, and I mean, it's my review then is going to be kind of useless, because a lot of what I'm going to give you, you could have easily had by going through that training. So just FYI on that. Yeah, let's see what else. Andrea says, Andrea asks, is it important to take web writing specific courses? I see ads for that through AWAI. I'm probably the wrong person to ask. Let me give you my take on this, and then you can decide what's best for you. I find that a lot of these courses, writing courses, are great to have in parallel to what you're doing building your business. What I see many people doing, however, is they keep inserting things in front of them before they do the things that are going to make the biggest difference. So, for instance, oh man, maybe I should take that web writing course and then that email marketing course. And so these become new steps that you have to take before you start looking for clients. And that delays the process. Writing courses are great. The problem is that they don't get you what you ultimately want, which is paying clients. And they're not, you can get clients without them, okay? So at the same time, they definitely have a place, of course. You really should know your stuff. However, here's the way I like to think of writing training. I think you need to get your foundation, right? You need to have your writing foundation in place. Take a writing course, copywriting course that has the foundational stuff. Go through that as quickly as possible. Set up a schedule and make sure you stick to it. And then let's go ahead and launch, because after that, everything else is details. Doesn't mean you can't invest in them, but I would treat those other ones more as reference and not as, well, I need this first and I need to master it before I launch my business, because then you'll never launch. So the way I've done it and the way that many of my peers have done it is they get the foundational stuff, they invest in some select detailed courses, but then they kind of skim through them. So in other words, instead of sitting down and studying and just processing that information and practicing and so forth, you kind of get an idea. Think of it as previewing the content by looking at the table of contents, going through the handouts, maybe going through select lessons or modules, and just getting an idea of what's in there. And then that's your reference. And then if you land a project, let's just say a case studies course, as long as you have an idea of what's in there, if you land a case study project or assignment from a client, then you have the reference to use. 90% of the learning, the real learning, will happen once you have a real gig, a real project. That's when the real learning happens. So, yes, it is important to have the foundational stuff. It is important to have some of these courses, but don't treat them as the sort of thing that you have to go through and master at least all of them before you get out there and start knocking on doors, because there's a million of them out there. So, and then you're just going to get discouraged if you keep taking course after course. Susan says, Mary, one of my favorite quotations, "Don't let what you can't do interfere with what you can do," from John Wooden. Ah, great. From Coach, love it. Susan, very wise words. Gordy, submitted a win here. Submitted photos, logos to a web designer working on a web copy. Decided to do education niche because I have more contacts in that niche. Also, the contacts are much more recent than other niches I could have chosen. Will use spec assignments for alternative health. There you go. I think that's your best bet. All right, guys, so any questions, type them in or raise your hand by dialing star 2. Or if you just want to have a chat about a situation, need feedback on anything, I'm here for you. Susan submitted a question. She asked, I'm getting ready to buy a new computer for my business. Should I go with a laptop or a desktop? I have a laptop now. I could keep it and have one of each, but I'd rather keep my life less cluttered and not have both. I can't seem to make up my mind. I'm driving myself nuts. Thoughts? Yeah, it's really more of a personal preference. If you have a laptop now, I guess it just depends on what you want. And I like a laptop for the portability. Sometimes I like to just, you know, go somewhere and just work remotely, just to change my environment. It helps me get more creative. I don't know. I just sometimes think better if I'm outside my regular environment. Also, when I'm traveling, I mean, indispensable. I got to have my laptop. I was a laptop-only guy for years, and mainly because when I was in sales, that's what we had. You know, just you need to be portable. That's what you have, and then I just got used to having that. So until 6 years ago, so for 12 years, I was a laptop guy. That's crazy. And 6 years ago, my laptop died, and I decided, and I forget, it was a weird decision. I just decided to go to a desktop, and I forget, it wasn't that I was tired of my laptop. I forget what it was. I think it was because I got a better deal on the desktop, and I just thought, you know what, let's just go with this. So I got that, and ever since I've just been that's what I have. I'm on my last my second iMac desktop. Love it, love it, love it, love it. And then I have a laptop that I use again just to kind of move things when I'm traveling, or if I need to go somewhere else to a different place, to coffee shop or whatever. The cool thing about this now, Susan, is that if you use Dropbox, and basically you're storing your files both in the cloud and in all your devices, it becomes so much easier. This used to be a pain up until a few years ago before Dropbox, because I would go to a coffee shop with my laptop, but then, oh, man, the files that I need are in my desktop, in my home office. So I would waste all this time because I didn't have what I needed. Now I have access to all my stuff, no matter where I am. So I don't have to remember to save all that stuff to my laptop. And then I have different versions now when I get back home, and that's a mess. So it just depends on what you want. But if you want to have that that portability, then keep your laptop, of course. But I think the benefit of a desktop is they usually run faster. You get a bigger screen. I think it's more comfortable working at a desk with a desktop. but it all depends how you have things set up. Not sure if that helps. All right, let's see. In the chat, Laura says, regarding warm emails, is there an important line of distinction we need to be aware of when it comes to spam legislation? For instance, can spam? Technically, spam is email you didn't request, right? Yeah, so here's the deal. This is an interesting time right now, Laura, because the U.S. has a very lax spam regulation, okay? And essentially, there's like five or six components to it, big components. And when I look at warm email prospecting, the way I'm interpreting the law is as long as you have a way for the prospect to opt out, so in other words, if they say, look, take me off your list or I don't want to hear from you, that you respect that, you have a way to not get back to them. That's really kind of the big deal there. And of course, two things. Why would you not respect that? Why would you even try emailing that prospect again if they even said that? And then number two is that's actually never happened to me. These regulations really apply more. I mean, they apply to all emails, but where they really kind of come into play is with email broadcasts. If somebody sends you an email that's, you can tell it's one-to-one, so it's personalized and relevant. It's not a copy and paste job. And the recipient is not thinking, oh, I'm on somebody's mailing list. The only thing they're going to think once they realize that it's, you know, it's a marketing email is they're reaching out to me and they have something they want to offer me. But it's not an email broadcast, and that's very clear. So even though technically it all commercial email falls under canned spam here in the U.S., it's not perceived as the same type of email that creates the problems, okay? As long as you, again, I cannot stress this enough, as long as you keep your emails personalized and relevant, you're not going to get those kinds of responses from prospects. Now, that is not legal advice. I'm not an attorney, blah, blah, blah. I don't play one on the internet. That's just, you know, my opinion. I've never, all the years that I've done this, I've never had anyone say, you know, can you take me off your list? Because that's not the impression they're getting. The impression they're getting is I saw something about them, noticed something about them. I think I may be able to help them. I don't know, but I'm reaching out just to see if they think we should connect. And if they think so, yes. If they say, if not, they'll either ignore me or say, no thanks, not interested. In which case, then I don't even contact them again. There's no point. Now, the interesting thing is the European Union is about to enact a data GDPR, and it's a data privacy law that has many components to it. It's extremely confusing, but this emailing, cold emailing, warm email prospecting falls under that. And my recommendation right now would be to not warm email prospects in Europe. Starting May 25th, that law is going to go into effect. We've been looking at this pretty very closely. And, you know, there's just really no way around it, bottom line. I mean, unless you – if you want to be compliant, you can't send a warm email to a prospect in Europe. So my advice – this is a big topic. My advice for now is just to not even bother. However, there's so many prospects in the U.S. that I would not let that bother you. And again, I just cannot stress enough, you want to keep your emails relevant and personalized. The prospect shouldn't even feel like this is an email broadcast. That's really key. All right, see, Gordy says, I have a background in alternative health. So this is a continuation from his previous message. I have a background in alternative health. I've taken supplements for 37 years. I had a prednisone shot for my knees, did a lot of research for alternative knee therapies before getting the shot. I can do work in this niche, but don't have near as many contacts as education. Could I list education and alternative health on my LinkedIn profile? It should be consistent with my website. Here's what I would say, Gordy. I think your question and hesitation and reason why you're still trying to find a way to wedge it in is that, it maybe not consciously, but I'm getting the impression that you don't feel like you're trying to diversify. Well, just in case I can't find enough prospects in education or get traction there, then I have the alternative health to fall back on. I have, like, you know, basically it's a two-prong approach. However, when the first one, which is education, is big enough that you'll have more prospects to reach out to than you'll ever have time for, I don't think you need to diversify or to hedge your bets. Okay, so my advice would still, don't dilute your message. My advice would be, if the alternative health is really more of a personal thing, and I call it a passion, but I understand that it's more than a passion. I mean, you know about it personally. You've had a lot of experiences there, a lot of personal knowledge, but your contacts and relevant career work experience is really in education, then I would stick with that. Drive that stake in the ground. You're going to have many more prospects to reach out to than you'll ever have time for. You can't go wrong there. You know, so when I suggest that it might be worth having both is when they're both kind of thin. But in this case, the first one is so rich that you can't go wrong there. And then, you know, don't worry. It's by adding alternative health is not going to get you anything right now on your website, that is. And if anything, it's going to have a slightly negative effect because it's going to dilute your message. It's going to feel like you're trying to be all things to all people. So it's the ice cream parlor that also sells, I don't know, plants and sod and fertilizer. You know, I'm being dramatic here, but you see what I'm saying? It's like, I don't understand. What's the connection here? So you don't want it to be, you don't want to create that kind of contrast. I would say just do your best, laser focus in one single target market, and then let's see what the market says. And then we can – you won't know until you have feedback, and you don't have that feedback yet. So I'll just try that, and then we can come back to it. Yeah, good. Okay, glad that makes sense. Perfect. Yeah, I'm glad you know, what I love about your thinking is you've really gone deep with this and looked at it from every angle, and that's the important thing. So I'm glad you did that. Yeah, perfect. All right. All right, let's see. Susan. Hello, Susan. How are you?
Oh, good. Do you have me on?
Yeah. Now I hear you now.
Oh, okay. Great. Hey, my first little client here is a friend who, her son is setting up a website for a business that he's launching. And she was telling me his homepage just went on for miles and miles and miles. And there's just way too much copy. And she asked me if I would just take a look at it and help him edit it a little bit. And oh my gosh, it was so much fun. Boy, did it need editing. But in the process, and he was very receptive. I was kind of worried that he would be overwhelmed by my recommendations of cutting about 90% of what he had on his homepage and moving it to other places on his website. But in the process, not only did he love my recommendations, but he wants me to actually sit down and, like, redesign his website, or, like, the homepage, you know, where I was suggesting where he put the headline and the, you know, copy, actually placing it on there. And I'm not really a WordPress. I mean, it's on WordPress. Mm-hmm. It's a WordPress theme. I've done a little bit of that. I had a blog a couple years ago, and I moved my own thing around a little bit, but I'm not real sure I'm comfortable doing it for somebody else. But, I mean, I'm excited to be at the prospect of learning, and I want to help him, you know, do whatever I can. But I'm also concerned about, you know, learning on the job in this way and kind of having him be a guinea pig. So I don't know what to do.
Well, there's no right or wrong here necessarily. I think you just got to figure out, okay, what are the pros and cons? And I would say if this is the sort of thing that learning this, even though it's uncomfortable, is going to get you somewhere to a better place, then it might be worth considering. But since this is not going to be necessarily something you're going to want to offer as a writer or copywriter, then it suddenly starts becoming the kind of thing that you're going to – it's going to be painful. I mean, learning the stuff, and especially when it's for somebody else, you want to get it right because you want to make them look good. And so it's going to take a lot of time, energy, and effort to do that, and it's not going to have a long-term positive impact necessarily on your business. So based on that, and a lot of this is if it were me, I would steer him in the right direction and put him with somebody who can help him, who's affordable, rather than trying to do this for him myself.
Yeah. Well, it's like I actually enjoy doing this sort of thing, the sort of the layout design of it. I'm just not especially up to speed with it, in that format. And it's one of those things that wasn't at all what I had in mind. I mean, like, 'cause I haven't even put my own website up yet. I don't have my own copy because I'm still figuring out what I'm doing. And I'm like, well, maybe this is something that I want to offer. Because it is kind of fun, but I would have to learn how to do it. So, I'd have to learn how to do it more solidly.
In that case, it's really up to you. I mean, if you think it would be worth investing the time and effort, then. But the thing is, once you commit, then you got to see it through to the end, right? The kind of thing, like you take apart the engine, and at that point, you're committed. It's like you got all the parts and pieces all over the garage and all over the floor, and it's like, man, you are in.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I wouldn't mind, like I say, it would be fun to learn it, and I wouldn't mind doing it, but I tend to worry with myself. I want to learn how to do so many different things, and there's another new thing that's grabbing my attention. Am I just chasing after another sparkly thing, or do I need to stay focused? But.
You know, my good friend Pete Savage has this this image that really has stuck with me for years, and he had this in a chapter in the Wealthy Freelancer book, and he calls it the puzzle piece, something about puzzle pieces. But the way he explained it is, look, you got this puzzle, right? And this puzzle is a rectangular shape puzzle. And you got all these pieces inside. And think of all the pieces as all the things that you want to do in all aspects of, let's just take your business. You can't put more pieces in there. You can only replace one piece with a different one. And the whole idea here was, it's really a metaphor for what we're trying to do here. It's because of who we are, and many writers were just, we're just curious people. We love to learn. We love to try new things. Everything sounds like a good idea. We have to be really careful with not saying yes to everything, because you can't wedge more pieces into this puzzle. You're going to have to take some out. And what most of us try to do is to wedge more of them in, and that just leads to some serious disappointment. So my suggestions are some food for thought as you try to make that decision is, if that's going to take away, and be honest, I mean, like, this could take 20 hours maybe, between kind of learning it to trying it, and the trial and error is messy, to refining and completing and him having something that, he feels really good about. Okay, so those 20 hours, what else could you do with them in terms of continuing to launch and to build and to find some new clients? Now, I'm not trying to steer you one way or the other. I think that's a better way to make the decision than would I like to do it or not? Because that's probably an easier question to answer. It's the harder question is really the more important one. Does that make sense?
Yeah, the puzzle piece that you mentioned, that's exactly, it's so funny because I'm so much, when it comes to things, I'm like really, minimalist, decluttering, simplify, clean and neat and tidy, but when it comes to ideas and thoughts, I want to cram them all in there. I'm just trying to figure out a way to make it all happen. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I feel your pain. Yeah. I got, I had to start a Trello board with all my project ideas because I get this anxiety. I get ideas in many times in the middle of nowhere. So I send an email to myself or I'll record something in Evernote, and they're everywhere. And I get this anxiety if I feel like they could disappear because I didn't capture them. So I capture them all on this Trello board, and that thing is a mess. It's just all these ideas. I want to do it all. You know, they all sound great to me. But you have to tame. That's a good thing to have, but it's not a good thing if you don't have a way to process that.
Right.
So, yeah.
Absolutely. Okay, well, if you figure out how to be two or three places at once and get it all, you know, multiply your time, you let me know, okay?
I will be very wealthy. Yes. No kidding. Yeah. So, you know, if you're thinking of all alternatives, you decide, you know what, that maybe this is not for me. Again, I'm not trying to steer you one way or the other, but there are plenty of people out there on in places like Upwork who will do that for, I mean, very little. So if he's already got something existing and now it's just a matter of moving some things around, maybe refining it and improving it, very, very affordable on Upwork, because that's the kind of work can be done from, you know, most of them are going to be offshore and they can do it affordably.
Okay. I'll probably point them in that direction then. I'll keep you posted.
Okay. Yeah. Let me know.
All
hey,
right.
Congrats.
Thanks.
That's definitely, you're moving in the right direction. I love it that you helped them out. It sounds like it was a win-win.
Yeah. And he's in a business where he's always setting, he has clients of his own that he's planning to recommend me to, who need my work too. So very, very promising and exciting.
Perfect. Love it.
All right. Thank you.
You are welcome. One of my first clients was a second cousin of mine who was in the food and beverage industry for a long, long time. And he left in his 50s, so he had all this experience. He was having a hard time getting rehired, as you can imagine, just, you know, the realities of business today. And he decided to just go ahead and go on his own, become a consultant, and just leverage all the information and insights he's had from all those years working in food and beverage. And so through my mom, he found out that I was doing this, and he reached out to me, and I barely know the guy, and to see if I could help him write a kind of a pitch letter to prospects, prospecting letter. And I did that and it knew nothing. It was kind of cool because I got to connect with him and learn more about what he's trying to do. And I wrote him a letter that was really effective for him, and he paid me $200. So sometimes he asked me how much. I said, well, normally for something like this, I would charge over $1,000, but, you know, I'm still kind of getting started. Why don't we say $200? I just felt that was enough to make him take the project seriously, and it was enough for me to give it the attention that it needed. So we keep that in mind, too. There are some situations, and we talk about this in Session 4, where you could go the pro bono route, but kind of an alternative, a different flavor of the pro bono route is to charge a nominal fee. And the added benefit of that is that you can get people to pay a little bit more attention to the project and have skin in the game. Of course, the downside is even that, something like $100 or $200 might be a deal breaker for some prospects, and in which case, then it's fine. You know, you can go pro bono. But if you can get it, then it's almost like pro bono because it's so low, but it's enough that they take it more seriously, and it's enough for you that you now feel like, hey, I have a paying client. You know, I'm now suddenly legitimate. So just food for thought there. Laura says, thanks for sharing the puzzle piece analogy with us. It's so timely for decision-making right now as well as for awareness along the way. Oh, so great to hear. Yeah, now that I think that you say it is, I think that's what he called it, the puzzle piece analogy. And it's so simple, but man, I got it. When he explained this to me, I said, you know what, I need to start making decisions using this. To this day, I still think of it that way. Sometimes I fall prey to my, you know, shiny object syndrome tendencies, but then I remember Pete, and he's such a Zen guy. And I remember, you know what, if I wedge this in, I got to take something out. You can't wedge it in. I got to take something. I got to replace it with something. I only got so much time. I'm just people who are love to learn, are optimistic, like all those factors, if you combine them, it's a dangerous mix. And all we see are squirrels. Squirrel! All right, questions, star two, if you have a question, want to talk through anything, I'd love to hear, too, in the chat area what you're working on. So if you want to type in where in the program you are right now, what you're working on, let me know. Would like to see how you guys are going. Of course, I know from you guys and talking today where you are right now, but Gordy said he was working back through session four. He says, I have quite a number of people I can notify that I'm a copywriter, former coworkers, friends, et cetera, working through that to a list of 10 companies to contact. That's the right way to go, Gordy. I love that you're every week, every time we talk, you're one step ahead. You know, you keep pushing through and making progress. That is the key thing. That's a win right there. Hey, last week I was here. Now I'm here. Moving through. So let me know where you are in the program right now. Everyone's kind of in a different place, which is perfectly normal. In star two, if you want to chat, or you can type in your question also in the questions box. Susan asked, is there any difference at all between .com and .net? I was looking at available web addresses, and both are popping up as recommended options for me. Well, .com is the most popular one. .net is a good alternative. Personal preference, and I think a lot of people agree with this, if you can get a .com, I'd rather go with a .com that's maybe not perfect than go with a .net that's got the perfect name before that. So, for instance, edgandia.com, if that was already taken, I'd rather not go with edgandia.net. Because people aren't used to typing .net, so I'd rather find something else and that I can get a .com for. Now, if you find something where both .com and .net are available and that's going to be your domain name, then buy both of them. That would be my recommendation, just in case. They're really not that expensive. All right, guys, star two. If you want to chat, have a question, issue, need feedback. And as we wrap up, here's what I'd like to do. In the chat area, tell me what your biggest takeaway is from today, from our conversation today, maybe a conversation I had with somebody else, and or your top action item for the next week. I want to make sure you guys have clear direction here, that you know where you are right now and where you should be moving toward. So big takeaway from today's conversation, even if it was from a conversation I had with somebody else, and your top action item for the next week. What are you going to be working on? What's the top priority in terms of our work together in this program? What is your top priority, your top action item for the next week? Let me know in the chat box. Mary says, my top priority is to send out some prospecting emails. There you go. Cool. Hey, Mary, I'm assuming, is your website up yet? I can't remember if you said it was up. Colleen says her big takeaway was wondering about that spam issue myself. Yeah. Great stuff. Mary says website is up. There you go. Okay, cool. Congrats. It's a big step. It's a big milestone. Colleen, keywork, more warm emails. There you go. Awesome. By the way, another country that has gone really strict is Canada. With the email, so that's one to be a little bit careful with. But again, guys, I mean, U.S. There's so many prospects here that for now, I would just just stick with that. You got more than enough to go after in here in the States. So. Top takeaways and top action item, or one or both. Anybody else? Gordy, top takeaway is the clarity you've given me as to my niche. That's awesome. Ah, that's great. Once you know, that's like it's like the big monkey on your back, right? Once you get rid of that, you can just now move forward, make progress. Top priorities are to finish website, update LinkedIn profile, complete my list of 10 companies, and continue working through this program. Super. Gordy, if you had to pick one, like this time next week, if I were to ask you, all right, did you do X, which one would have to be the top one out of all those? Linda says, hi, Ed. Good to hear your voice again. Well, hey, great to have you back, Linda. It's been a while. She says, my top priority for this week is to find five people to whom I can send warm emails. There you go. Linda, one quick recommendation. If you're having a hard time kind of getting started there, I would start with one. I know you have five. Start with one. So look to see what you can point out to them, the way you're going to, your meaningful connection, in other words, how you're going to start the email. And go ahead and find the name and contact information for somebody there. Craft the email and send it, and then move on to the second one. Many times I find that when I try to send out five or ten, it's harder because by the time I compile my list, by the time I start drafting the email for the first one, it's been 2 days, and I forgot why I put them on the list. So many times I find that doing it in batches of one, doing them individually, is easier. No more than batches of two or three, though. So fantastic. So let me know, Linda, next time we talk, let me know how that went. Susan, take away. It's good to have a group, y'all, to give me perspective and keep me focused. Ah, that's so true. That is so true. One of the big things people tell me, some people tell me, look, I don't want to be in a group. Can we just work one-on-one? And I tell them, look, I don't do one-on-one anymore. Once they start, they get it. They understand that being a part of a small group like this in a community has other benefits that they didn't realize they would get. And one of them is the interaction, the feedback from others, and then just learning from the conversations that I have with other people, because we're talking about things that they hadn't thought of or that they didn't think to ask, or maybe they meant to ask but forgot. So it's just lots of different benefits to it, and you don't know until you try it. So that's great to hear that it's been helpful for you, Susan. All right, guys. Well, I can't stress this enough. One of the most important things you could do is to have – a top action item. I like working in groups of three, and every Monday morning trying to make sure that I have different milestones or goals for that week in different areas of my life and business. But there are three that I pick every week that these are like do or die. And make sure that you have three, and if you don't have three, that you have at least one, especially in your business, that you're working toward and you will accomplish by the end of the week. That's going to help give you the momentum you need and the focus. It's so easy, as we talked, you know, with Susan today, to lose sight, lose focus. I mean, gosh, many times I go out, take a 10-minute break, I come back, and I forget what I was supposed to do next. You know, it's just it's getting harder and harder to maintain that focus. So if you have that front and center, it becomes a lot easier. Every week, a little post-it note somewhere, note on your whiteboard or bulletin board, then just make sure you know what it is. Gordy says, if you had to pick one, the website is very important. I want to get that monkey and the LinkedIn monkey off my back. I can easily move on after those two are done. There you go. So you've identified your critical path there, website. So let's get the website. LinkedIn kind of goes hand in hand with that. So look forward to hearing more. Next time we talk, Gordy, I'll ask you about that, or please let me know. All right, guys, so I don't see any other questions or raised hands, so let me just do one more check here. Nope. We'll go ahead and wrap up for today. Let's continue that discussion in the forum. Again, guys, whenever you're ready, If you want me to take a look at your website, I'm happy to do so. We were doing those in these calls, but that just wasn't working out really well. So now we're moving them off the calls, and I'm doing those separately. So let me know. The website review thread is where you can post that, but just make sure to go through the instructions first. All of you guys have been. I just wanted to make sure that you knew about that. So we'll wrap up. Have a great rest of the day, and we'll talk soon. Take care.